Good evening, welcome to River Styx at Duff's. This is the finale of the official 92-93 season, and it is performance poetry. We will have a first set by Jan Eigner and Dion Waxman, and then we will take a break and we'll hear from the warrior poets, K. Curtis Lyle, Percy Wells, and musicians. So we'll get right into the first set. My name is Michael Castro. I'm the director of the River Styx at Duff's poetry series, which is now in its 17th year, completing its 17th season. So a little bit about our performers in the first set. Jan Eigner, Janet B. Eigner, practices both psychology and writing. Her most recent works have been published in Dance Magazine, Dance Critics of America News. You might get from this these credits that she writes about dance occasionally, and if you made that assumption, you're correct. Other magazine publishings include Free Associations, Shape Magazine, St. Louis Magazine, and Women Artists News. She reviews dance regularly on KDHX here in St. Louis and in the monthly Performing Arts Review Intermission. Her poetry has been published in Blue Mass Review, Reconstructionist, Sagarin Review, a new copy of which is just out, and Visions International. She also has poetry forthcoming in the Hawaii Review. She is at work on Our Daily Duck, a book about maintaining life's balance, and you'll hear the concern with life's balance in the poem, the suite of poems, I should say, really, that you'll be hearing momentarily. The book that she's working on, Our Daily Duck, has been warmly encouraged by both the fiction and nonfiction editors of Algonquin Press, and so she's hoping that something develops from that encouragement. She has just completed Blue Tit, a book of poems culling 20 years of backpacking in the Grand Canyon, some of which you may have heard about a year and a half ago in another performance piece called Rim to River that was at the Randall Gallery and Edison Theater in collaboration with the painter Bill Cohn and his works on the Grand Canyon. One major piece is in that new room at Duff's you might take a look at the break. This performance piece won a KALOP grant and has been produced as a TV video. She will be performing tonight with the cellist Dion Waxman, who is from Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, and formerly a member of the Honolulu Symphony. Right now, Dion is playing on a temporary assignment with the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. She's also a composer and has been published by MMB Music of St. Louis, and a performance of her Fanfare for Strings is planned this summer for the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra. So we want you to sit back and open your ears, open your hearts to Janet Eigner and Dion Waxman, and please welcome them.
Thank you, Michael. You probably know I've been obsessed with the Grand Canyon and have made 25 years of hiking trips there. Eventually, I began to write poems and first named the collection Chamber Music, for in the canyon I best hear the sublime music of the natural world. Then I delighted in so many tiny blue birds identified as blue tits. I renamed the collection after them, a remarkable name, I believe. The Hopi people live close to the Grand Canyon. Their flute ceremony symbolizes the Hopi's emergence into this world after a journey which involves negotiating many levels of existence. This drive for emergence is what has been my need to repeat the journey down to the bottom of Grand Canyon and back out each spring. It also leads me to support the Grand Canyon Trust, an organization which protects the Colorado Plateau and all its diverse groups. The trust brochures are on the literature table. Please take one and join. To spend time in Arizona and the westernmost part of the canyon where the Havasupai tribe lives is to soak up elements of Native American, Spanish, and cowboy culture. Pushing back just a few thousand years, you realize humankind originated in Africa, and all our ancestors traced their way up through Asia, some taking a side trip to Europe, others continuing over the land bridge into the Americas and thus to the Grand Canyon. If one instrument and one piece of music could best express the majesty of the Grand Canyon, I would nominate the cello and J.S. Bach's Suites for Unaccompanied Cello. The cello's range and the music resonate with universal movement, geologic movement, historical movement, spiritual and personal movement. Tonight we'll perform Bach's first and second suites. This summer I'll continue this exploration with Steve Balderston doing the fifth and sixth suites. It's a thrill and a pleasure to collaborate with Dion Waxman, who plays this year with the St. Louis Symphony. We will perform this work as one uninterrupted piece, meaning to hold your thunderous applause to the end, please. So I want to tell you beforehand the meaning of eight Hopi, Havasupai, Spanish, and Hebrew words which come up through the reading. Shekhinah is the Hebrew word for the female aspect of God as that force is revealed in the world. Kachina is the Hopi word for the earthly representatives of the spirit world, sort of the equivalent of saints. Kokopilau, or Kokopelli, is the hunchbacked Hopi god of courting who is always presented playing his flute, and the flute player leads his people on their journey up into the conscious world. Playa is Spanish for the outline of a former lake which has dried up, leaving just the mineral deposits. I've seen a series of these playas from the window of an airplane above New Mexico, and the playas sparkle like gems. Farolito is Spanish for a lighted candle placed inside a paper bag weighted with sand. At Christmas time, these farolitos line the walkways to houses in the Southwest and other places, a glowing welcome. Yoni is Hindu for vulva, symbolized by a triangular shape which represents the Great Mother as source of all life. The Grand Canyon's Great Tonto Plateau is such a yoni, halfway down into the canyon, and looks triangular when viewed from the rim above. Spider Grandmother is the Hopi and Pueblo spirit who led the people into the world. And finally, Hard Beings, woman, generated the Hopi people. She is of the earth but lives in the heavens, symbolizes solidity, and is responsible, like the Hebrew Shekhinah, for the substance of the earth. Chamber music 2. The organ groans under the swelling breasts of the spinster. The congregation chants the holy Shema. In this modest Hoosier assembly, cordial and devoted, I try to make the words fit. I think someday I'll get it. The red rock gets me instead. The soft red seizes my cells, won't temper its fertile grasp until tendrils reach west from my heart. I twist, I try to prune them back. I ask this burgeoning growth, what are you? Where do you come from? Unstable. unstoppable. These roots return me to a canyon where I cling to the dry rock and pulse within this chambered heart. I resonate to the native drum resounding across the canyon floor, follow as the pounding drifts across continents. I am stunned by the throb of gnashed and buckled earth plates forming East Africa's parched grandeur. I cough at volcanic steam, sulfurous, lifting on the Great Rift Valley, and tremble at the first human trusting two legs to sustain her on this rocky floor. I am pummeled by Ethiopian winds as the red escarpments slowly disgorge their vassals, jawbones which sing ancient prayers, skulls of black Jews chanting the Shema, nomads whose tribes wander Asia, find Buddha, and drum their path across the icy land bridge into sunny America. Here in the thrumming air, I summon them all and sing to them in the redolent red, sing to this wild world, to this desert garden. Count unpacking for days, sifting memories in the lumpy back sack, the faded down vest a seed pod just burst in the desert air. A chiaroscuro of red rock grit blazes the thrice resoled boots. I count on the flight to fill half a day, the drive north, climbing from Sahuaro to Ponderosa, the other half as I grope for the compressed vest. Feel it expand around my chilly shoulders. Then, planted in the bracing sunset, metal and wheels finally shed, I can barely count the salutations bestowed on me through pulsing feathers of fog, flesh of the rock, Shekinah and Kachinas, the everything in the brilliant void, the half and the other half. To know. Like a plunging elevator, the angle and frozen descent seize my innards. I am rearranged in this air, displacing warmth and glee to my belly. My boots crunch the white ribbon trail. Fog, a forest thick, this partner lascivious tangos the biscuit cliffs, waves me downward past pyramids of mauve to the sage plateau. I strike out for the platform's end, hope the first May glimpse of the Colorado will be emerald, rid of silt. Joy quietly suffuses my arms, which throb to encircle the luminous river. From here a hammock toward which I wish to plunge, on which I, caught softly, would send back a fluvial smile. The green lap serenely accepts the arrival of one more who wishes to kiss and kiss the allness which has no lips. Thank you. legs of freedom. Unleavened squares, extracted, still intact, join the remaining sticky ounce of wine, remnant of blood on the doorposts, the fluttering manna, the angel wings, a backpacked wilderness seder. Enough that we had endured two inescapable days along the grapevine abyss. Enough that tonight's sleep will be terrorized by large mice hurling themselves at our fragile tent. Enough that tomorrow we will endure a day cramped with heat, the incline so commanding we will crawl on hands and knees. Enough that the day after, thinking ourselves out of danger, we will navigate so icy and narrow a trail any misstep will serve up death or worse. Pour bloodless wine to the angel of life who fans in her creatures the unceasing itch to stretch beyond conception, who wings a prayer through planet-deep, bone-stained tyranny. Sharp velocity. Predictably, seconds after we blow out the candle in this tiny tent, his gently snorting metronome paces my slower descent, his vibration a drifting pallet, softer than the wafer beneath me. Then his gauge suddenly lurches and a sharp velocity inspires him, wrapping my dark thoughts in a startled vacuum. He exhales, spits me out, a strange dislocation. My late lessons build like his night breath in this canyon, dumb at first, then accreting the soft comforts, then wrested away, uprooted and forced to resettle once more on life's pillow. Dwellers up to the red wall sandstone, past random springs and vining crimson snapdragon. Our tribe climbs the fourth day. The guide knows unmapped paths, leads us by sunset over a shrubby ravine to the mouth of a cliff whose lips barely accept our dozen sleeping bags set side by side. Fetching the evening's water, we squat on the ledge and share out fuel and food, then sink into the darkness of our niche. The black sky funnels stars through widening eyes, harmonicas shiver song. The night sidesteps tails pitched undertone, shapes like a chef, the clan whose totem rocks their tempered bodies, swallows like raw steak, their limpid souls. The second world. I am unprepared for endorsement from the natural world. When I play my Gibson guitar, the cat stalks from the room, ears flattened, squeaking epithets. Perched on a kaibab promontory, I pluck gospel tunes on a backpack guitar and chirp with open-throated joy. Mid-morning ravens silently ride the current over and over our heads, their close dips an alarming comfort. Just coincidence, I say, but then up from the nearest gamble oak, a bevy of blue tits appears like popping corn, winging with me, grace to the wind. Grapevine Trail to Horseshoe Mesa. This journey meant for pleasure, a forced march. 1 foot in front of the next along the only trail, 2 days, the chasm, 1 mile deep, 2 feet away, clawing on our bellies up the so steep trail, we reached the summit by late afternoon. Miners, federally, miners' rusted tin cans, 19th century garbage under federal protection, litters the mesa. We snake past the yawning last chance mine and slide the sweaty poundage from our backs. Light as agave chaff, scoured empty as the mine. Raising the tiny tent in pink dust, we sit down hard, bare arms balmed with cool shrubbed pinon breezes. Drenched with rosy pleasure, every atom glows salmon. The sun pours through me like warmed honey. Pulled to the edge this time, one thread of a gauze scrim above the hushed canyon, before the darkness, I am carmine opened and carnelian drawn. Chamber Music 3. Anxious to hike the canyon, a friend trains us so well, I have rare energy. On the way up, with D key harmonica for a flute, I breathe tunes, immortal Coco Pilau, backpack for hunchback. Hikers join our soulful singing cadence until we bunch at another kind of jam. In a sandstone chamber just off the hot trail, a bighorn sheep curls, indifferent in slumber. Animal silence plucks a cellular melody, softens my pace, and sends me to dream time, to the native dancer who played his fluted song, and then sent the life in those dark eyes deep to my heart. I have lost time and yearn to nestle in the cliffs, to journey in pinon dreams. Old Time Religion. This poem has an epigram from Black Elk. The darkened dream of it was here. In May, moon of shedding ponies, the sand already sears by mid-morning. We hike through the village, past a Quonset hut church, where the somber Havasu families, children squirming, hear a beer-bellied missionary and his pale, bony wife sing Jesus songs. Just past the houses, blue water widens in the creek bed limed milky white. Between the hot banks of datura vines, mahogany mother swims with her son, their ebony hair winging the current. She glares at our passing. Wishing her a good afternoon, we startle an old woman on the trail. I ask, how do you pronounce Wigiliva? With her arms in the stony shadows, her face open animated, she tells how the land was rent, the two halves parting and rejoining, till two girls rolled in giant logs, secured the opening, the two Wigiliva boulders perch above the canyon, protection, benediction. Her face sobers. Now I go to my sister's house to sleep. I'm alone. All day, Anglos and Havasus, we sit with the breeze, the sun, the blue waterfall. The last dazzling orioles return to their dusky nests. My throat too raw for talking, we retrace the soft sand path beside the turquoise water, a vigor of cress and celery terraced with travertine weirs. A vermilion flycatcher sings, and on a creek boulder hushed, big as a child, a red-tailed hawk hunches in meditation. Salt Canyon. In the canyon where the Colorado and Little Colorado meet lies the place of emergence, a 2 billion year old womb. Here, each spring, the Hopi gathered salt, divine consolation for the barren harvest, until strangers claimed this deedless chasm, this glorious desiccation. Over New Mexico, flying home, sheared by grief, my limits wear me. A ringed necklace of brine jewels, I take the necropolis tour through the cold air, puckered ridgebacks, leathery chests, sunken sternums, articulated ribs larded for the afterlife with salty playas. These diamond strings embed the mountain mummies, my salt still brimming water. Fossil record. My fingertip strokes the scallop void, its grit anchored in rusty Toro weep stone. Inside its rayed hood, a plump warmth siphoned food from the saline liquor. A nubbin with its kind until death extinguished its throb. The tepid ocean washed away flesh, unhinged the clasped shells, and a rain of sands and pressure and time embedded its hunched perfection. Toro weep, a Paiute word, a valley awash where the greasewood grows. We lie inside the shell of our tent. We finger the round roughness, the softness of our sexes, laugh at the easy throb. Mouths siphon the salty nutrients until tides heat and wash our core. Then a bitter residue limes the dark pleasure. I am afloat in the night with piercing sorrow, as the stony fossil palm, shorn of its clasp, Toro weep. Igniosity. I, the granite block in which I, the sculptor, see the figure, feel the delicate promise, marvel at its lucid detail, the smooth, warm curve of its fine-grained sparkle, the graceful balance. though stirred, I remain a hard, uncompromising monolith, nearly swallowed again in fiery magma, magnetized to this planet. The work occludes in my grasp. My hands haven't the skill or strength, and I grind at my obtundity. I chill in deep, slurry pools, cry to feel human and artful. Yet, my igneous flesh conceals a labyrinth. Beneath my lacy crystals, I wander, thrown unpredictably when, through a shock of softness, an unexpected cleft, a surprising path, I fall into the fluency of my abiding core. The dusk stones glow, a farolito trace up the prickled trail. I sweat in the steep dusk. A blue tit screes its rasp, underbelly of tender pearl, back of lapis, tiny comic winging this Milky Way of sage and branch. I echo its trill, mock the rills and rhythms till it flies so close. I am one with the starry mantle, the white ring round the dark sparkle of its laughing eye. In cobalt soft camaraderie, I walk up the steeper gray and pink of Vishnu, sing being to being bird language, then crestfallen, cut off. When the tit is joined and flees with its mate, jilted like 15 at the hop, or newborn at the glacial teat, gasping still with luck's matchless slap. The child wove a lilac embrace, plucking long alley grasses for the woof, one circular, flimsy wall of weeds, leaves, and limbs. Inside her night house, clouds would gather in the bruised air. Repelled by static, she would circle its edges, bump and pinch her sister's arm, taking misplaced revenge. Amid shrieks, embraces, and blows, limbs tangled, robbing her of breath. Outside, in the backyard hush, sparrows dotted the plum tree veiled in white blossom. She mounded the cool sand in the shelter of the lilac bower and knew its sublime perfume, time without end. Now in the solid comfort of cradling rock, each red bud blossom on the grove of Tanto's yoni flowers pink over the wound. phantom in the first green plant moon, touch the yielding brown canyon clay, mold the cup of your palm in its cool plasticity. Distinctions and opposites vanish, life as the rushing creek and the doing, death as the hushed canyon and the hushed body, youth as the silky skin taut over lively knees, age, the skin puckered over unreliable joints, youth as the stratified walls merely 6 million years deep, age, the gnarled Brahma schist, a base of 2 billion years. Then, in the absence of opposites, will wonder grow lucid when the bowl of life shatters? Labyrinth. Mule hooves make a poultice of the upper trail. The pink mosaic carries glowing green dung, rims the foam and stench of Uranus pools in this still, dusty last hour. Relief suffuses this Indiana maiden at trail's end. I step aside to salute a passing mule train driver, that rare female cowpoke in the lead. In our sweaty jubilance, we are Annie Oakley and Spider Grandmother, having once more lassoed ourselves from the labyrinth. In a sweet shower, the cinnamon dirt cascades away, lost as the extravagant feast I am too tired to relish, for I am finally no more free than that yearning cowgirl Ariadne, corralled with my unquenchable beast, and those fractured heroes bumbling in tunneled darkness who fray my gleaming thread. Yet, spinster that I be, I cannot help but twirl the lariat, this humming cord which twines me to my skipping self. Sioux Falls. A horse shrieks from the willow thicket, hooves swish the marsh waters. In the cliff lap of a sand dune, I nestle, head bowed to the misting emerald tresses of the goddess. I merge with her waterfall locks, which flow and pound. The cerulean pool between us joins me to this hard being's woman, turned round, hair steaming, the terraced limestone filigrees, opulent scallops pulsing her white, quietly streaming tendrils. Gold and ebony orioles wing out from the willows, piping alarm. A red bandana pulls the raven hair from his shoulders. A Havasu youth, so handsome my breath catches, quietly climbs from the marsh, seats himself beside me, and examines my drawings. I inquire carefully of his life. His voice, thin, reedy as the wind, urges me to come with him across Navajo Falls. His offer, 30 years late in my measured life, I watch the milky calcite coat the scalloped pools which ceaselessly pour and refill below us.